Navigating the career space can be a daunting task, especially when you're creative, charting a rather unconventional path through life. In today's episode, we speak with Sam Walls, who's the founder of Turnheads, a career development platform for emerging creatives who are looking for their first jobs or clients in the creative industry. Sam has worked in the creative industry for over 16 years, where she's been leveraging the power of community to support young people struggling to understand and showcase their full creative potential. In this episode, we touch on her early experiences trying to figure out what a career in her industry looked like. And this was back in the mid-2000s, when Rihanna was dropping Umbrella, J.K. Rowling was publishing the last Harry Potter book, and Steve Jobs was launching the iPhone. She highlights the challenges she faced adapting to the evolving world at the time, and how she networked her way through various workspaces and the value of community as support systems in any creative's journey. So, if you are a creative or not, but are just unsure about how to navigate the first few hurdles of kickstarting your career, look, you've turned into just the right episode. So join us as we dive into Sam's world of creative career development.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. Wherever it is that you're listening in from, welcome back to the Boardroom Banter podcast. It is a very chilly evening, Friday evening here in Nairobi, stepping into this space and stepping into this conversation with you guys and with our guests today. And I'm feeling very comfortable in today's conversation because a lot of what the work that the guest does speaks to different aspects of my own journey as an entrepreneur, as well as my present experiences as a creative. And you know, finishing university last year, you know, finding myself in this season of life where, you know, we're trying to navigate some of these early career decisions as how the industry looks like. What skills do we need, you know, to thrive in the creative industry? What kind of mentors do we need to look for? Which communities do we need to be a part of? And that is a lot of what we'll be talking about and touching on in today's conversation with a fantastic guest. I'm sure you've heard her bio intro before stepping in. But without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I'd love to introduce you to a phenomenal lady and industry leader known as Sam Wells. Sam, welcome to today's conversation.
Hi, wow, what an intro. Thank you for having me.
No, it's our pleasure. How are you feeling today?
Yeah, good. I'm excited for our chat, and yeah, hope it kind of connects with people, and yeah, just really interested to see what happens.
Yeah, super. I'm equally as excited. Where are you currently calling in from?
I am in not so sunny Essex in the UK, which people who don't know, it's just outside of London, so it's about half an hour train journey into London, but it's where I grew up. And so yeah, calling from Essex today.
Interesting, thank you. I'm also calling in from the neighborhood which I grew up in.
Oh, nice.
And that'll make for a fun first question. But before we get there, for those who are hearing you and learning about your work for the very first time, if you were to explain the work that you do on a day-to-day to a 10-year-old, how would you describe it in the simplest of ways?
So I get asked this question every so often, actually, and I always like to say I basically do colouring in for a living, in a way. It's I specialise in branding and packaging design, which it's basically helping brands and organizations to communicate with their customers better, really, and using creative thinking and problem solving skills in a visual way. So the way that we solve problems is usually through language or visual communication, basically. So colouring in as a broad spectrum, making things look nice, but there's a lot of strategy behind it too.
That's a phenomenal way to put it. I can see a 10-year-old like literally understanding it immediately and going to grab the coloring book because it that needs your help coloring in the lines now. Phenomenal. Speaking of coloring books, speaking of 10-year-olds, I mentioned that I'm calling in from literally the house that I've lived in. I lived in since 2003, growing up in Kenya. But there was a sudden break in my childhood, 2008, where because of dad's work, myself and my mom and some of my siblings relocated to New Jersey. So I grew up there for 4 years and then came back to Kenya. And that whole shebang, that whole entire experience. But before I stepped into this conversation today, actually, I was catching up with two of my longest friends. And we were talking about some of the things that we used to do in the neighborhood at the time, you know, the games we used to play, the things that brought us together. We used to play cards. And then I pulled out some cards and we actually played a game like an hour ago. And I was reflecting on that because I knew I was going to step into this conversation. And one of the things that we've grown to appreciate in the conversation that I have with our guests and learning about them is that a lot of our childhood experiences, the people and places that we grew up in, play a large role in who we become and which passions and interests we choose to dabble in and explore. And for myself, you know, getting to learn and know you, and for listeners, for us to understand who you are today and the work that you do, what do we need to know about some of your early childhood experiences and some of the places and people who were really part of your life in those formative stages?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I definitely identify with what you just said in terms of, you know, playing games with your friends. And I mean, I come from a family where no one else is a creative. Everybody else has kind of gone down different, I guess you could call academic routes in their lives. So, yeah, I was the only person really that's kind of pursued it as a career. But, you know, we were always very creative as kids, me and my younger sister. You know, we were always making the Blue Peter challenges and Art Attack as well. And yeah, you know, making birthday cards for our parents and centerpieces at Christmas for the table, all sorts of things. We were always kind of making stuff. And, you know, that was encouraged by our parents. You know, they didn't really know where we got it from, I guess. We just did it. And that followed through into school. So the subjects I really enjoyed was art and graphics. And yeah, it was only really when I guess, was leaving school, going into college, that I thought, oh, maybe I could turn this hobby of mine into a job. But I still didn't really know what that was, how you did that. So yeah, it was kind of just going through that, that kind of taking my love for just making stuff, really, through into college. And then into university, thanks to one of my tutors at college. And then at university, that's when it really kind of funneled me into a job title. I think before I went to uni, I still didn't really know how you turn this thing into a job. And I think that's a bit of a downfall, really, because it is taught in schools, but not in the same way, maybe, as other subjects. In that, you know, this can be a career for you.
Yeah, I definitely resonate with that. Even just looking at the education system that we have here in Kenya, there's a lot of that emphasis on the academic aspects as compared to the co-curriculars, to the extent that at some point when I was in my final year of high school, my class teacher was really convinced that I shouldn't be going out for things like music festivals, and I was in the debate team as well, and in basketball, and she was convinced that you should spend this final year focusing on your grades. Whereas, you know, those same skill areas that she was undermining were being lauded by other people and, you know, winning awards for the school and developing, you know, a very important skill set that I'm practicing now on this phone call, which is, you know, the public speaking and the conversational aspects of what I do. And I love to understand, you know, to narrow into like what you said, where when you were transitioning from school is when you were starting to figure out how to translate all of these creative interests and passions into, you know, making it make sense in the industry at the time and how the world was looking. Could you talk to us a bit about what was happening in the world at that time when you were about our age in your 20s? What were some of the current trends? What were you seeing your peers doing or going through that was sort of played a role in how you approached such a decision and such a, you know, sort of trying to play 3D chess and see where you fit in the grand scheme of things. How was that experience like for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is going to show my age, but I I graduated before social media, really. I mean, Facebook was around, but then also MySpace, which I don't know, people probably don't even know what MySpace is anymore. But so it was very much, I guess I felt like I was still in a bit of a bubble. It's not like now where you can kind of, you know, go on any social platform and do a search for what a job, a day
right
job is.
Right.
You know, or even connect with professionals in a certain industry. You know, there was none of that. It was very much getting into the industry is very much like who you knew as much as what you knew. So again, I think it was really down to my university degree and the way that it was formatted, in that the first year we kind of studied lots of different stuff, like the spectrum of graphic design. So like typography, print, digital design, and branding and packaging design, and illustration was another one. So you kind of really just, it was a bit like college in a way, like a foundation course almost the first year. And then the second year, I should mention as well, like that was my first year. That was when the 7/7 terror attacks happened in London as well. So I was kind of out of it a little bit. Like I studied
Sorry about that.
In Surrey, in Farnham. But again, it kind of, I remember it making me feel a little bit like, oh, do I want to go and work in a big city? And again, because you only really learned about design industry companies really through sort of magazine subscriptions. So
yeah.
Design Week we have over here, and their big award ceremonies that they do and things like that. And they were all in London, and they were like these big juggernaut companies, you know. So it was quite intimidating. It was really quite intimidating, especially because I was so shy back then as well. You know, I barely spoke up in my class, let alone how I was going to go into a busy studio. You know, you see designers on TV and they're always really confident. They're quite extrovert. You know, they're quite cool. And there's me, like, you know, just trying not to draw any attention to myself at all. It was really kind of, I think, through uni where we then, going into second year, it funneled us into two pathways to focus on. And I chose branding and packaging and illustration. I don't know why, because I can't draw, but I did illustration because I liked it. And then the third year, we picked one to specialise in, so I obviously picked branding and packaging. And that was the first time that it started to sort of click, like, oh, okay, this is a job. This is like A to B to C, you know, of what you do working through a brief and why people pay you to do that, you know. So I think I graduated in 2007. And I actually Googled this. So it was when Umbrella came out by Rihanna.
Oh, stuff, actually, yeah, I remember.
Yeah, and the last Harry Potter book came out, so everyone was going crazy for Harry Potter. But then it was also the biggest thing that happened, probably for me at the time, was that Apple actually launched the iPhone.
Oh,
so
snap.
There's like all of us that we've been studying like print design. And then Steve Jobs walks out on a stage, changes
the stage,
and he's like, everything's digital from now on. So
You've answered this question so perfectly because I can't even imagine how that would change my thinking of the world, my worldview, seeing all those things happen from Rihanna to Steve Jobs. How did you process that into your next steps or into your where you were at the time? Did you feel like it was going to disrupt your day to day?
Weird, I remember it being quite the iPhone. I remember it being quite exciting because obviously everyone was obsessed with Apple and how cool it was, and I think that in a way it raised the profile of design as a career for me, because it's suddenly like this sounds like an M&S advert, but it's not just a phone, like it's an Apple phone. Every single part of it is designed and is a wow, even unboxing it, all of that that happened with the iPhone. So on that side, it was so cool. But on the other side, I guess it just made it a little bit more daunting. Like, I really want to get into this industry, but it just seems so big. And so I didn't see how I could kind of get in there really. But yeah, I mean, I did end up doing work placements, which was, the absolute key for me. And that is ultimately what made me realize that it wasn't this big scary thing and I could see myself doing it. But yeah, I don't think I actually realized at the time how fundamental that digital shift was going to be either. Probably, but again, because we didn't really have much social media at that point. So it's like, yeah, this is a really cool mobile phone. So yeah, we couldn't have realized like where that was going to go.
That's very correct. And I think coming to the examples that you used, Steve Jobs' iPhone, J.K. Rowling, the last Harry Potter book, it's a writer.
Which again is like
And
storytelling,
then,
right? It's like it's
yeah. You
creative.
see where I'm going? You see where I'm going?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
And then Rihanna, right? And so if I can tie all those three together, looking at the stage of life that I'm in now, a lot, one piece of technology that's disrupting all of these three is artificial intelligence, for instance. Right, that's sort of the wow thing. Everyone is shocked. Everyone is scared. Something's gonna happen to their job and everything. And I can see just how much this is weighing into a lot of the decisions that I'm making and my peers are making, whether it's which industries to get into or which ones to avoid, which ones to be a bit cautious with. And I guess one thing that, for example, the iPhone and even this technology that we see now is really solving for is this access issue. And just drawing from the comparison of what you said, you were growing up at a time where accessibility wasn't as it is now with social media, for instance. And I'd love to come to the work that you do now with Turnheads, because in a way, I feel like it is solving for access as well, access to information, training, and this capacity building that's not being found, or rather being structured in a way that is effective. I'd love to hear about how Turnheads came about, and what was the theory of change behind it? What was your thinking? What did you see Turnheads bringing to the creative industry that wasn't there anymore, or that you wished you had when you were trying to figure these things out, getting into the industry?
So I mean, I'd love to get your perspective on this too, but like, as you say, I was going through the if kind of a digital revolution when I graduated, and you're going through the AI shift now. But
Revolution.
it's similar kind of thing, but it's like different, slightly different impacts maybe. Because I mean, I've been in the industry now for 16 years, and as I touched on, I got my job through doing internships, 2 weeks here, 2 weeks there, and I ended up kind of networking through people that I met on those placements. It's almost like I kind of frog hopped from one to the other, following people that had been at the previous one. Or freelancers were great because they dot around all sorts of agencies, and they've got their ears around. They know who's looking for interns or juniors. So I got kept on basically off the back of the last placement I did. And yeah, just actually just so happened they I got made permanent at Christmas 2007, and the financial crisis happened. Lehman Brothers went broke.
Yeah.
Crashed the whole world in the next year, 2009. So I was so lucky to get my job when I did. And then I was obviously worried that I was going to keep it, because it's a bit like last in, first out sort of situation. But luckily that didn't happen to me. But again, I guess, well, I don't know if it's the same everywhere, but in the UK, like, you know, our economy is not great, and they keep talking about another crash here and things like that. So there's still kind of very similar anxieties out there, I think, for people who are going through graduation at the same time that I did, and having that belief in yourself, and living in a bit of a vacuum as well. So yeah, in terms of turnheads, I decided to do it and take the plunge with it really at beginning of lockdown, when lockdown happened. And I saw all these students and these graduates who were, you know, they'd literally just graduated, and then we were plunged into a lockdown. So no one was hiring, no one was running placements, and they were just shoved into isolation. And I just felt so bad for them, and I wanted to do something to just give them a little bit of a safety net in a way. And I thought I'd quite like to build like a little community of people who are going through the same thing, and people who are in the industry who kind of, you know, they want to give back, they want to chat to students and graduates, and people who are just generally like interested in getting into the creative industries. So yeah, Turnheads, then I guess the thing behind the name is interns turning heads with their work. So I built this platform.
I see that.
So yeah, our interns turn heads on the platform. And yeah, you can basically go on there, and businesses, educators, so like universities, colleges, things like that, and then also entry level creatives can kind of go on, they can make a profile, they can upload their projects and start to build a portfolio. And then you can kind of connect with potential employers. And even I've got like a database on there of creative businesses just around the UK, because that was another thing. Like I heard a lot of people saying they didn't even know where to go to find creative businesses near them. So I was just kind of, the more I spoke to people, the more I was kind of just pulling on these strings of like things I could maybe add to the platform that might help. And I mean, part of my job as well at the agency I work at, has been to sort of find, interview and mentor the interns and the juniors that have come through our studio. So it was also from hearing their stories of like placement poverty, where you're doing placements, you're not getting paid, basically. You've got to travel up to London, you've got to find somewhere to stay, you're working, you know, long hours at these studios, and sometimes you weren't getting paid for it. And, you know, some of the people who came on to work at our studio was like, you know, if I didn't get the job when I did, I would have had to give up design as a career. And it just, I was like, that, I can't imagine you doing anything else.
Crazy, yeah.
It's so wrong. So yeah, I guess I just wanted to create somewhere where it's a bit of a community that you can come to throughout your studies and also after graduation. So there's not this like cliff edge at the end of education. You know, there's people there that have got your back and are sharing their stories as well, because as I said before, like I graduated with them when there was no social media, and at the time, you know, I didn't know any different. Looking back, I could say, oh, you know, if I had LinkedIn back then, it would have been so much easier.
Right.
But in a way, right, I'm glad that that was the case, because I can't imagine graduating now and being bombarded all the time with creatives living their best life and all that, like the imposter syndrome and the mental health
Yes,
impact that
the
must have. I
doubt,
mean, how
the
do you feel?
anxiety.
And now you've got AI as well. I mean, how does it make you feel? Out of curiosity, like, do you feel like you have to have a break from it sometimes?
So I've been waiting for this question. No, but to answer your question, I think it's funny you asked me this question in a season where, right in this limbo stage between finishing school and graduating, where there's a lot of questions that I'm being asked about what I want to do now, you know, what next, Bunny, you know, what. And I've been telling everyone, ask me that after graduation. But the real reason behind it is I've really taken it, I'm trying to build certain boundaries around my mind, my mindset in a way, because I realized just how much that all that access, all that exposure to so many things going on around the world, so many people making moves, if you're not able to step into social media and it being a healthy place for you to be in, then you need to rework something. So that's sort of what I'm trying to rework right now. But it is a very common conversation around our peers. Last 2 weekends ago, was it the other weekend, we had our first campfire sort of networking chat with our podcast community. So at some point last year, we decided to see which people within our audience, hi audience in the background, within our audience would be interested in joining a more structured community and engagement, right? And a lot of the people in the chat, you know, we just finished college together. It's the same pressure, you know, pressure to get a job, pressure to make money. How long are you going to be in your parents' house? Are they trying to, you know, kick you out? Do they want you to pull your weight? All that stuff. Yuri just flew to Amsterdam a couple of weeks ago, you know, starting a whole season of his life there. I'm in Nairobi. It's crazy. And so it does go back to the community, though, and the kind of support systems that are there. And I love that you brought it up, because one of the things that I've been really curious about when it comes to your work is how you navigate this multi-stakeholder environment. And I'll just go back to my experience 2019. We're trying to build a startup at Tinder for internships, right? An online matchmaking platform that will connect interns and people looking for job opportunities to employers. Right. And so we were navigating this multi-stakeholder community of the interns, the employers, and sort of the schools and institutions in which they're coming from, because those are one of our key partners. And we had a guest recently who mentioned something about this multi-stakeholder environment. And what she was saying is that the people in this community, students, teachers, institutions, and the job market, are having a difficult time agreeing what the role of a school is. Is it to impart knowledge? Is it to train people for the workplace? You know, is it to raise their kids, you know, with their parents, you know? And the biggest challenge we had as Student Vortex, you know, as we're trying to place interns to jobs, is the incentives from the employer side was difficult to get in, because it's a question of how well can you tell us this person? How well can you prove that this person is a right fit for us? You know, and we were trying to solve for a certain point in this value chain that we weren't really getting right. And looking at the work that you do, maybe it's because, you know, it wasn't a niche community. It wasn't, you know, I wasn't in a place to place interns because I hadn't had internship experience as well. That was one of the reasons that came up in a pitch that I had. So I'd be very curious to understand your view on this whole multi-stakeholder community, because I'm in a place where I'll turn to my institution to look for help transitioning into the job market. I want to walk into an employer's office and, you know, hear what it takes for me to be there. What's your view on this community as a support system in many regards? And do you feel like they agree on what the role of a school is? And so this transition process.
New year, new me. Sounds familiar? Well, one of our goals as podcast hosts has been to get deeper into our bags, and a key part of that is learning about diversifying our income and investments. This episode is sponsored by Apex, a cryptocurrency exchange that understands the importance and increasing complexity of investing in the 21st century. And they make it easier and simple to make your first step. Explore the world of opportunities with Apex today.
Yeah, I mean, I do feel for universities and, you know, schools and things like that. I mean, when you think about it, you know, you're going to study, say, for a degree, and it's a 3-year course. And within that course, the universities have to, you know, they're teaching much larger, or at least in the UK again, like they're teaching much larger cohorts of students. They've got so much technology and software, or, you know, hardware equipment to teach people how to use to a certain standard by the time they come to graduate. And, you know, speaking to a lot of lecturers here, you know, a lot of their time is sort of helping their students with their mental health. The mental health impacts of all the pressure, as you say, to like be good, a decent level of good at everything very quickly, get good grades, get a job quick, know how much you need to earn, you've got to ask for. It's just that there's pressure from all sides, and I think it's kind of like the universities don't always have the time to do everything. They like the industry usually wants kind of industry ready candidates straight out of uni, and it's not really the way that it works. You know, they need that mentorship and that mindset shift in a way, because, you know, if you're coming out of university, you've probably been in the education system for a number of years.
10-12 years, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So all you've known, all the work that you're doing is from an education structure. So you've done everything to get grades, and it's a bit more kind of tick boxy. Whereas when you're finishing uni and you're going into work, you kind of need to shift a little bit how, because it's all about like selling yourself and personal branding, and, you know, telling a business why you would be a good fit for them at the same time as finding a place where you want to work.
Oh,
so it's kind of like this big mental shift,
yeah,
that has to happen. And, you know, I've got really good relationship with 13 unis here, and they're all very different. Like, you know, it depends on the kind of services that your university offers you, whether you get an end of year show anymore, whether the careers team at your university have any experience themselves in the creative industries. You know, I've worked with careers teams within universities who, you know, none of them have ever worked in the creative industries. And they say, like, students come to us and we can help them with their CV, but we don't know what a good animation looks like, or showreel, or portfolio, and things like that. So I've kind of come in and help them kind of go through the motions, if you like, and sort of give them some pointers on what they need to be telling the students that they need to have as part of their collateral when they leave university. And again, that's something that's not going to happen unless the industry sort of come in and share
what
they're looking for too. Because, you know, things are always changing, and skills are, you know, there's quite a big kind of skills gap at the moment. So they need to be saying to the universities, you know, we need more people who can do this kind of thing, or think this kind of way, or whatever it is. So again, I think the community aspect is so important, and bringing those three parties together just to share insights into their own worlds.
Yeah.
And ask questions at the end of the day.
Yeah, yeah. I want to spotlight something that you said with regards to the 13 different institutions that you build relationships with. One of the byproducts that I came across when I was reading up on your work is the 25 workshops. And so from listening to the work that you do, there's something that you're getting right that some people are getting wrong. There's some metrics that you have, and there's an innovative model underlying a lot of the work that you do. And I'd love to hear from you which aspect of these barriers that you're solving for, such as exposure, resources, branding, what is this mix that is coming together for Turnheads that you're seeing progress and that you're seeing a lot of growth when it comes to the specific niche that you're solving for? Because it sounds quite fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, I think because of the whole hybrid working element now off the back of COVID, I think that's opened a lot of doors for a lot of people in that remote working is a lot more possible now. It's not the same in terms of the experience you might get, but at least you can potentially get your foot in the door in other places that you might not have. And the same goes for like businesses being able to partner up with universities who are not near them necessarily. You know, the whole like you hear a lot from universities, and they kind of just contact the creative companies that are in their immediate area, and vice versa. You know, companies only want students from their local uni just because it's easier. Whereas now I think people are
buying
a little bit more, which is good. And the same goes for network reach as well. I think it's much easier now for people to connect, especially on LinkedIn. I always say to students and grads, like, get on LinkedIn. It doesn't look like the most creative place ever, but you know, I guess I basically wanted Turnheads to grow into a LinkedIn meets Skillshare. So I want there to be this kind of like, you know, you can go on there, you can watch our live streams, you can watch our video tutorials, there's downloads, all that kind of stuff. There's resources there. And it's literally industry professionals who have been in the industry for maybe 1-2 years rather than like 30. So they're a little bit more relatable. And I think it's just sharing real stories as well, rather than the Instagram version of your career journey. You know, you get the real life view of it. And, you know, it is a competitive industry to get into. And sometimes it does take 6 applications to the same agency before you even get an email response. You know, it's a lot of it is timing, luck. You know, you can be a great designer, but sometimes it is just consistency is what kind of gets you through the door. And yeah, I think, you know, I think universities also need to communicate more to their students that people in the industry are very, very time poor. It's funny, actually, I went to a industry day last week at Brunel University, and they had a few of the graduates back, and they've been in industry for 2 years now. And one of them was saying, so he's now kind of just stepped up to being a middleweight designer in motion graphics. And they are looking for another middleweight. And he said that he only works for like a relatively small company, but they had over 2,000 applicants. Can you imagine 2,000 showreels?
Whoa.
To look through? And he was saying we were literally having to sit down for about like half an hour a day. We'd have to grab out of our, because we were doing our 9-to-5 job. We have to then find this new person. So you sit there, you get through the first 10 seconds, and then you have to skip to the next one, and it's like they're even the yes or the no part, and it's brutal. But I love
it. Oh, that sounds brutal, actually.
It is, but I said to him, I was laughing, and I said, but now you know, now you see the other side Like, as a student, you were like, I'm not getting any replies. And now you've been, now you see why. And it's like, it is brutal, but that's why you've got to keep going. You've got to keep tweaking and resending and tweaking and resending and trying a different way and sending it to someone else. And because it's just, yeah, I think it's trying to share all this information that just otherwise you would never know about, I guess. And hearing it again from people who are maybe a little bit more relatable. So there's like a big mix of people who are sharing their stories, I think is really important. Because again, when I was graduating or studying and stuff, all we could do was go to, you know, the Design Week award shows and things like that. And, you know, you're in a room with hundreds and hundreds of people. And all there was really was, you know, there'd be a big stage and there'd be like this old white guy going up there doing an interview with another old white guy. And sorry, old white guys, but to me as like a 20-year-old girl, it didn't really click. And you just can't put yourself into that industry. So I think it's really important. And I think that has broken down a lot of barriers now, in that you can access people like you a lot easier now in the industry while you're studying, and vice versa, if you want to. It's still scary, I'm not taking that away. Like, it's still scary approaching someone you don't know and asking them for advice or help and then maybe just getting ghosted. But it's not personal.
I like what you the examples that you're drawing from, but actually just the relatability that you mentioned. So much so that you mentioned Brunel. I have an older cousin who studied in the UK, and he went to Brunel actually. And then he went on to study law. He got a master's in law. Then he relocated back to Kenya. And he's always had this itch to get into fashion.
Mm-hmm.
So around COVID is when he was, 2020 was when he was making some of these just really big decisions. He quit the consultancy that he was doing and launched his fashion brand, right? So stepped from a very conventional, you know, career such as law into the fashion space in Nairobi, somewhere where he hadn't spent so many years at that time. And there were a lot of people who were advising him against it. You know, there were those who were supportive. For someone who's listening to this conversation now and is either making a shift from, you know, something else to the creative industry, or is in between and trying to, you know, should I go all in? What is a piece of advice that you'd recommend they steer clear from? You know, what shouldn't they listen to? What's the worst piece of advice that they could be given right now? Sam said, don't listen to that.
I think fundamentally that the creative industries it's not a real job, and it doesn't pay very well. Because it does. You know, you have to work your way up like most industries, but it is absolutely, it's an exciting, it's the biggest growing industry in the UK. And there are so many different types of creative jobs as well. I think, again, colouring in, people think it's just doing things. And again, I guess this kind of comes, for me, it kind of comes back to what you're taught in school. In school, it's all about this, they call it STEM. I think it's science, technology, English, and maths. And you have to have those ticked off by the time you leave school and stuff like that. And they just do like art or art club as another thing sometimes. And it's not seen as, you know, I can't say that I've ever used Pythagoras' theorem ever since I left school. But, you know, in design, you use your communication skills in English. You use a little bit of maths. You use a little bit of science. And you use technology skills. So it's kind of, you're using all of those skills. You're just maybe coming at them in a different way. And I think critical thinking, like creative thinking, it's such a important skill to have in society. It's not just relying on data all the time. It's coming in it from a human perspective and putting yourself in another person's shoes or another community's shoes or whatever, another demographic, thinking about things in different ways and challenging sometimes hard data that's just kind of quite blinkered. And, you know, people can absolutely make the transition. There are so many transferable skills from most jobs, really. As I say, like math skills, you know, you having an eye for space and layout and things like that. And yeah, English skills in terms of like storytelling, in advertising, in creative writing, content creation, you know, all of these skills, they kind of come from the basics that you sort of learn at school, really. So and it's never too late to transition into something. So, and you can start small. You don't have to kind of quit your job and then go and apply. You know, you can kind of work your way up. And I think, as you say, like joining communities like ours, I think will really help, because it will allow you to start to see how many different avenues you can go down and how many different ways you can access the industry from.
It's crazy you bring that up, because we recorded a guest yesterday. His name is Jonathan Chippendale. He's a co-founder of a company known as Holition. It's a London-based creative innovation studio. And he was talking to us about some of his top employees or people who, one lady just walked into the company one day and just sat there and started working, like quite literally, and said, yeah, I'm here to see the CEO. And like, she was about to quit her uni to work for him. Like literally, I know your episode is coming out after his. So for the listeners, if you haven't caught the previous, go, pause right now. We're almost done here with time. We're 5 minutes to go, but pause and go listen to Jonathan. But it was crazy, because, and his work is in fashion as well, in terms of creative and offering sort of digital solutions to different fashion brands. And it's literally like what you're saying, it's perhaps a privilege and even like an upper hand that our career trajectory is not set in stone, right? Which means there's more opportunity for you to build the life that you want as a creative. And that's something powerful that's taken out in this conversation, Sam.
Definitely. And I think as well, it's sort of, I would say it's like my parents' generation, maybe, where it was like you start on a career path, and that's you for the rest of your life. That's the job you're going to do until you die. Whereas now, I think people chop and change all the time, and things are much more malleable now. And I'd also like to like bring up maybe the LinkedIn report that came out for digital marketing, and they, you know, they've kind of concluded that a lot more employers are focusing a lot more on skills now. So again, transferable skills, rather than so much on your education background or your experience as well, which is great for diversity, because it's going to mean that so many different people can start coming into these creative jobs, which is really great, because again, the more diversity you have in your creative teams, the more creative you can be, and the more kind of strategic and critical thinking you know you can have in the mix. So yeah, I think that's going to be great, and I think it's going to be a massive leg up again for transferable skills.
Yeah, you can notice my background has changed. It means we're coming to the end of our conversation. We're leaving. We're stepping out of the boardroom. I wish our listeners could see what's going on. This is live action right now. Action Packed Podcast. But I love what you said, Sam, and I'm leaving this conversation feeling very encouraged as a creative, more so because, you know, there are people like you out there who are building these structures and, you know, spaces and platforms for us to, you know, to find the answers to, you know, some of the deepest and very personal questions that we ask ourselves. And so thank you for that. We do this very special segment at the end where, you know, we have you picture, you know, yourself walking out of this very lovely boardroom on my left, and you know, you're walking down to the elevator, and similar to an elevator pitch, you know, an intern of ours steps into the elevator with you, they're curious about how they can be a turnheads intern, and they have a couple of quick fire questions for you. See what I did there? Packaging and branding. I'm telling you guys, what math I got it going. So let me know if you're ready for these very short quick fire questions, Sam.
Yeah, go for it.
Super. When you re-listen to this, we'll have edited in like you like steps and then get out of it. Yeah, you'll listen to it. But the first question is, what did you care about in your 20s that you don't care about anymore these days?
Ooh. I think I've really enjoyed my 30s. I feel like I know myself now. So I don't care so much about people's perceptions of me, maybe, because I know who I am. Yeah, I think that's something that's been quite enlightening, I guess. Not saying I don't get imposter syndrome still, because I do,
yeah. But
I think fundamentally as a human being, I know who I am and I know what I want out of life, and that keeps me grounded, so yeah.
Mm. That's encouraging for a 24-year-old, such as me, to hear.
Yeah, your 30s. Your 30s are amazing. Yeah. You're not kind of bombarded with having to like figure stuff out anymore. You kind of do it. You just crack on.
Yeah, I think I'll take my time in my 20s, though. I feel like there's another side to that coin that you don't want to flip, that you're not telling me. I feel like you're holding out.
Just don't be scared of getting older. It's amazing. Embrace it.
Fair. Next question. We've spoken a lot about education. If you were to think back to your favorite teacher in life, if you can name them if you want, you can give them a little shout out. Who knows? They might listen to this episode. But what did you love most about how they taught you?
Oh, so I'll definitely shout them out. My school art teacher, Miss Dunn. My school graphics teacher, Mr. Parsons. It was just really cool. I was so excited to go to their lessons. And I don't know, Mr. Parsons, my graphics teacher, he was like, he's a bit of a geezer, and he kind of just held a little bit of slightly different respect with the students.
Yeah.
he was a really fun teacher. Tammy Ellis, my graphics college tutor, did a BTEC with her, which is like the equivalent of 4 A levels now. She was nuts. She just knew so much, and she was here, there, and everywhere. And she was quite scatty, but in like a really good way. And she just, what she was just like flinging university prospectuses at us. Like, go and apply for uni, do it, go for it. And so I might not have even gone to uni if it wasn't for her. Who knows? And then my tutor, Catherine Slade Brooking, who's a legend in her own right in the creative industries. She was my university tutor. And again, she just brought the best of me out, my creative me. And you know, funneled me into that job role, and just supported me the whole way. And she did that to all her students, and still does. I mean, she's just amazing. She's absolutely brilliant. And she's a big champion for creative careers, really.
Yeah, I can see how your face lights up when you talk about the. That's so awesome. I love that. Shout out to every single one of them. Final question. This is such a fantastic time. If you were to, I really use a different environment in the context of this question, but let me change it to, if you were to put up a billboard in Brunel, if you were to go back to Brunel for that conference and just sneak in a billboard right at the entrance, you know, where every single day, you know, these students will come in and this billboard will communicate something profound and phenomenal to them. What would you have on your billboard?
I think maybe something like, what do you enjoy? Like a question to them.
Ooh, You're such a teacher. I say you're such a teacher.
Yeah, but again, I think seeing listening, sitting down with all the different students that I spoke to, and then kind of, you know, going through their portfolios or their projects, they were a little bit kind of deer in headlights. And again, they were kind of almost going through that tick box exercise of like, I've got a logo, I've got a piece of packaging, I've got a poster, I've done an animation, I've got some social media. Like, is that all right? And I kind of just tried to sort of stop them and say, yeah, that's great. Like, it's amazing work. But why have you done it? Like, what have you enjoyed about doing
it?
That project? What is it? What is the thing in that project that you did that you really, really enjoyed? Because that's what you should be looking for in a job when you leave this, or that's how you should be thinking about how you're going to use that project in your portfolio. And when you talk about things that you love and that you enjoy, you naturally come out of your shell and your personality shines through.
Yeah.
And again, it's that whole shift from education into who you want to be and where you want to work and how you want to work and who you want to work with. It's reclaiming your own sense of self in a way, and just concentrating on what you enjoy and what you want to do for the next few years, you know. And you can change that. It's not set in stone. But yeah, don't lose focus on why you decided to do that course in the first place and what it is that you really enjoy about it.
Wow, that's powerful. I'm thinking about what I enjoy and what I've enjoyed over the past hours getting to hear your story. And that's one of the most fulfilling things about this podcast and about what we've been doing. We've been at it for 2 years, 3 months now. And every episode we walk in here and we leave with a piece of our guest, and that piece is the story that we carry on. And that is a lot of what I'm left feeling after this time spent with you, Sam. So thank you so much for not just coming through and hanging out, but, you know, being very vulnerable with us and open with your wisdom and the knowledge you had to share.
Thank you. Thanks.
Yeah. I'm gonna sit with this for a while. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I want you guys to come chat to Turnheads, come chat to our community too. And I'd love to hear your stories and more about, you know, your journey too, for sure.
We might just take you up on that sooner than you think. Haha. but for our listeners, thank you so much for hanging out with us over the past hour. There's a lot, you know, that Sam has spoken about. If you need to re-listen to this episode, please do not hesitate. To re-listen and take home what you can, the aspects in which you relate to and resonate with in Sam's story. If there's any questions that you may have for Sam and the work that she does, Sam, where can people plug into your work? This is your moment to shine. Where can people find you and Turnheads?
So you can find me on LinkedIn, Sam Wells, WELLS, on LinkedIn, or hop over to Turnheads on social media, or turnheads.com, which is TERN heads for intern. Sign up for free, join the community, send me a message. Best of luck in your creative journey.
Super. You heard it here, folks. Like, share, and subscribe. Sam, until the next time we have you back, because we definitely love to have you back. It has been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been really, really fun.
Cheers, everybody. See you on the next episode. My name is Boniface Omini, your local noisemaker. It's been real.
Hey there, folks. We're wrapping up today's episode with a quick one from our sponsors, Nepal Tea Collective. Nepal Tea is a social enterprise based in New York that distributes the freshest organically grown teas to different parts of the world, directly sourced from smallholder farmers in the beautiful country of, you guessed it, Nepal. We're proud to be sponsored by them, and at the end of our episodes, we like to wind down, and we cannot think of a better way to wind down than with a cup of hot Nepal tea. So if you'd like to check them out, go and look them up at nepalteacollective.com. That's nepalteacollective.com for more information. See you on the next one, guys.